For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Broadcasting from the Annie Up Studio, it's the longest running poker podcast for the everyday poker player with your host, Joe Scales.
Hello, A-Team. It's Friday, June 2nd. That's right, I said June. Believe me, I'm as shocked as you are. Hey, last week I put an all call out to you guys to go to YouTube and subscribe because we're trying to get to 1,000 subscribers, and so many of you did. We're just over 600 right now, but still short of what we need. So if you haven't already, go over to YouTube, look for Annie Up Poker Media, and hit the subscribe button. As you'll hear later in the show, I'm planning on putting the segments of the podcast up separately there, and I'll have some other videos that are fun planned as well. This new venture into the video podcast has been fun and I'm learning so much, but now that we have a few, give me your thoughts as well. Send me your feedback to podcast@annieupmagazine.com. Also, this weekend will be the release of the June edition of the magazine. A lot of you have signed up to have it delivered to your email already. But if you haven't done that, go to AnnieUpMagazine.com and put your email in the form that shows up there. This month, we go even deeper into the conversation that I had with Tom McAvoy, so you'll want to check that out. That's all I really have, so let's get on with the show.
Find out what conversations are happening around the poker table with Table Talk.
All right, we are back around the poker table with surprise guest.
Hey guys, what's up?
Mike has joined us back for Table Talk once again.
I'm awake.
Mike, it's been a while.
Yeah, dude, I am so sorry, and I'm sorry to all the A-Team and everybody out there too. I've not been really healthy here lately. I don't know what's wrong. We haven't figured it out. We'll see, but I'm getting as healthy as I can, and I'm trying to play as much poker as I can. And who knows, maybe I'll just retire soon from my other job if I can figure out a way to afford it and jump in here full time with you.
The pay's not great, but it's fun.
Hey, that's all. Fun's a big thing. Fun's a big thing. How's that? Hey, I was looking at some stuff, and I meant to ask you because I know you know all about this stuff. Because I haven't been able to look at, I don't even care about the TV half the time anymore or nothing. I've not done a lot in the last few weeks. Tell me about the WSOP starting, man. I missed it.
Yeah. So WSOP started a few days ago. You know, they always start their first event is always the casino employee.
Boys. Yeah.
The casino employees event. So that started a few days ago. Then they always have, you know, fun events. But this year, you know, they've already got into a 25K high roller six max, which I already watched Daniel Negreanu. I watch his, much to my wife's chagrin, I always watch his videos because he does such a great job of chronicling the events that he's playing in.
Yeah, he does.
So I always watch those. My wife is always like, really, I'm going to have to put up with listening to Daniel Negreanu in the morning, every morning now.
Well, you put your headphones on. I mean, what the heck?
But I did already watch his episode where he played in the 25K high roller six max. And I always like watching also the feature tables or the final tables that they have on the Poker Go. app as well.
The Poker Go is doing some stuff I know we're going to talk about in a little bit too. But right now, hey, talk to me real quick because we're going to, I know we're limited on our segment. What's this new thing, the multi-million draw bounty thing?
Yeah, so they've got a Mystery Millions event, which is basically it's a mystery bounty. And Todd Lemansky, our LA ambassador, he and I were talking about this as well. Well, that'll be in later in the show, but it's a fun twist on bounty tournaments. I mean, and so the top bounty in this one is $1 million prize.
Oh.
So just by knocking somebody out, you can go draw your card and it could be $1 million.
I'm in. Holy cow. Wouldn't that be fun?
And first place is guaranteed $1 million as well.
Oh, wow.
So theoretically, you could win $2 million in this tournament if you won the $1 million bounty and first place.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. It's
nuts.
I think it's fun. I think these mystery bounties are fun. They, like, Todd and I were talking about the progressive bounties where you get half of somebody's bounty and the
other half goes into yours.
Those are fun too, but this mystery bounty is just fun because everybody is invested.
Yeah.
They want to know, what did he pull? What did he get? I do one thing before we get too far away from Poker Go. I do want to talk about this because I think this is pretty fun. Poker Go has joined with Gala Games or Gala Games. I don't know how you pronounce that. But they're making a new social poker platform called Poker Go Play.
Okay.
And it sounds really fun. They're going to have all these little celebrity avatars and things like that, but you can win actual prizes. And from I've seen little screenshots and things of it, and it looks kind of fun.
Huh. Yeah, I'll take a peek at that.
Yeah, Maria Ho has signed on already as the first Poker Go Play ambassador.
Of course she would.
Yeah, and so she's going to kind of usher it in, so to speak.
Awesome. That's super.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I can't wait for that to come out because I think it's going to be fun.
Nice.
But you told me you were excited to get on here because you had a question that you wanted to ask.
Yeah, I have a question. All right, A-Team, this one's for y'all. We're going to start there. Slow play or not, and it's just on this hand that we got right here. And so we're in a game, and you're on the button. You look down, you got pocket aces on the button. Ace of spades, ace of diamonds.
Do not slow play.
Right? You're very happy. Hey, ain't going to slow play that puppy, are we? So, you know, you got the little blind, big blind comes around. And middleman raises it 10 times the big blind. 10 times.
How many big blinds do you have in your stack?
I mean, my stack's not bad. And I'm looking like, Well, that sounds good to me. So it comes around to me. At this point, what do we do? Call, raise it up a little, or shove? I got a problem with shoving right now because it's pocket aces. And if you shove, then he's got pocket aces and gets down. Both y'all chop a pot. Then you got to pull it back in and restack all the chips. So what are we going to do?
That's why I asked how many big blinds you have, because it matters as far as my decision.
Oh, yeah. I'd say we probably got 500 big blinds left. We're good.
Oh, you're way deep.
We got a big stack.
I'm re-raising.
Yeah, sure we are. What are we going to re-raise to, though? We're going to double him? All right.
I'm going to at least triple him, maybe quadruple. I may go four times.
Okay. I'd probably go to four times too. But anyhow, I think everybody out there is agreeing that we're going to stay in the hand, right?
Oh yeah.
All right.
So if somebody is folding at that point, then I want to know why.
Oh, exactly. So I'm looking down here, and okay, so that's what we do.
You bet four times. The
yeah, because everybody has folded. Bet. When it comes around now, big blind, little blinds, everybody's folded. Now we're heads up with this fold. He calls.
He only calls.
He only calls. Okay. Now we got a game. We get to see a flop. Boom, here it comes, baby. Ace, king, ace. Oh. Sorry, I just threw my pen way the heck over there. That's why I like it. Hey, guys, I'm glad that this is live. Y'all can see why I make the noises I do. Anyways, you know, comic relief over there. Now we got quad aces with a flop sitting in front of us and plenty of money over here to bet. But so did that fool over there because he's been at it all night too. Got brought in from another table. It's ace, king, ace. Now the king is the king of hearts. And the ace is the ace of hearts. And the ace of clubs, that's what's on the flop.
All right. So I think I know where you're going here. But
you know where I'm going now. Because my mind didn't go there for a little while. Now it has. So you're on the button. He's first to act. So he bets 10 times the blind. I mean, he bet his original bet 10 times of the big blinds, which at that point was. So he's put in 10,000 again, say.
Okay.
And you're looking down thinking, huh, so you got him right. You got him right by it right now. You got him. He went ahead and bet 10. He bet the stack of 10. Re-raise him? Of course. Well, how much would you say?
I'm all in.
Okay, this is the point where you're all in.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. That's my question, guys. At this point, you've got four aces. You've got the setup. You've got pocket
You've got
aces.
The nuts. You've got the nuts.
You don't have the nuts. You got the nuts right now.
Yes, you've got the nuts. There's no better hand right now that can beat you.
Right now. We still got two cards to go.
Yeah. Right? And if he's going to draw to something that can beat us, the one hand that can beat us.
That can beat us.
If he's going to draw to it, he's going to pay for it.
Yeah, that's what that means. So I feel that way. Pay for it. You want to see those next two cards, you go pay for it. And you'll pay big for it.
Exactly.
But if I do shove that all in and he calls it and we're even, then this could be you're out of this tournament where you're like you and him are number one almost to the daggone end.
I'm not folding this hand for any reason.
No, I didn't say fold.
No, I know. I'm saying at no point.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if the straight flush gets there.
Yep.
I'm still not folding.
No.
Because it's the only hand that is going to beat me. So I might as well get it in now.
Yeah, because we don't know what he's got, but we know that he's already put a considerable amount in. I'll take if he wants to fold when we go back. So you're all in. You shoved.
Yes.
The only difference I'd have done is that I'd have probably 10 times his bet, not all in. But that's okay. Either way, so guys out there here, y'all just send it in. Should we slow play this puppy to the end or should we shove now on the flop?
We talk about premium pairs with Mark later. And so he'll have his point in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, I you could win that little bit right now and be happy for it. If you're going to slow play it, that's where you take the chance every time another card turns. You know, every time a card turns, it he's got a chance to hit something.
Right.
So maybe we can make him think, oh, I'm not paying for this. Fair enough. That's my question. What do y'all think? Slow play or just take it now?
Very good. All right. Send them in to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
I got to know that way we could figure it out and I'll tell us what y'all do and then maybe we can put it out to Mark next time. Other thing I wanted to ask you about, we were chatting earlier about the podcast on YouTube.
Yeah.
Guys, I need y'all to get out there and get your friends to get on there and just hit the like button.
Absolutely.
Get up, good. And we've also noticed a couple of things. What did you notice?
Yeah, everybody's watching around 10 minutes. So we were talking about putting just each segment out there on YouTube. Obviously, the whole thing will be available on Fridays as well. But just, you know, as we have segments, just putting each segment out there as well.
Episode 20, Table Talk. Bam. Yeah. Episode 20. Whatever the next day or whenever it comes that you get it done and that you're having your interviews with us on separate days and stuff, or we're right. together, whatever. But then on Fridays, episode 20 complete.
Right.
So you can either watch 10-minute segments or you can watch at a time or you can watch the whole thing at a time. Joe, I think that's a no-brainer. That's a win-win. I wish I'd have come up with that idea. Do we slow play or not? Well, pretty slow.
All right.
I hope I'm here next week.
Absolutely. We'll talk later.
Now it's time for Call the Floor with Elliot Schechter.
Elliot Schechter is the poker room manager for Rivers Casino in Schenectady, New York. He joins us each week to say how he would rule on situations that come up in your games, and he's with me again this week.
Hello, Joe.
How you doing, Elliot?
Doing pretty well. Things are good. How you doing this week?
Doing well. We were just talking about allergies. They're pretty rough right now, but...
I'm on four different medications to... eye drops, nose spray, breathing medication, antihistamines. I mean, it's been rough.
Well, yeah, and I'm really surprised at how, you know, with it getting as cold as it is up there, that allergies are that bad. But
well, weed pollen is worse than any flower or tree pollen, and weeds are super resilient. They'll grow in any weather and take up a lot of space, and they produce more pollen than anything. Otherwise, we wouldn't have weed killers and weed removers.
Fair enough. Well, hopefully we don't have very much longer of this, and then we can get into the summer. So. The heat, and then we'll have another problem, right?
Yeah. Oh, thank God. Yes. 90-degree weather coming soon. Yeah.
Well, this week's Call the Floor was sent in by Dane Kinsey. This is an interesting one. We've had some interesting ones lately.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, this one's in a tournament. There are 17 left in the tournament. The blinds are 4,000, 8,000, 8,000. We're seven-handed at my table. Under the Gun has been enjoying quite a few drinks over the past 2 hours, and he opens to 20,000. I'm in the small blind and call with the Queen of Spades, Jack of Spades. The flop comes Ace of Clubs, Nine of Clubs, King of Spades. We both check. The turn is another King, and I bet 40,000. Under the Gun takes about 2 to 3 minutes, then calls. The river is a 3, and I go all in for about 100,000. Dane says this is where things get weird. Under the Gun didn't seem like he wanted to call, but he wanted to know how many chips he had. He was pretty drunk, and I guess he couldn't count them. So he keeps asking the dealer to count them, and the dealer is saying no. After the fourth time, the guy just shoves his chips to the dealer for a count. Since he pushed chips over the line, but wasn't intending to call, the floor is called. They rule that it is a call. He shows pocket tens. We ended up having the same exact amount of chips, and I was out in 17th. Since the intention was never to call, should the ruling have been made as such?
Well, there's a bunch of things here to unpack. As to the actual play of the hand, I'll leave that to any of my fellow contributors to the any of podcast. I think the play of the hand is certainly worthy of discussion. I'll leave it at that. I'm here to talk about the ruling after the hand. First, if he's pretty drunk, why is he still in the casino? At some point, most casinos, especially regional casinos, have an obligation to not let inebriated customers remain in the casino.
That's a fair point. I never even thought about that side of it.
And second, why is the supervisor not paying attention in any way? I mean, all right, so maybe he's not drunk enough to be removed, but the rules of the game specifically state that chips need to be stacked neatly and in stacks of 20 when possible, so that everybody at the table, including the dealer, can have a good view and able to make a rough count of everybody's stack. That rule is not unimportant. It needs to be applied. Then it comes to the result of the hand and what happened when the guy shoved his chips. The intention? Yeah. And I get your point, Dane, about having to rule on intention. I mean, we have to make judgment calls as tournament supervisors and directors. We absolutely have to rule on intent sometimes, but not every time. Some things are basic. When it's somebody's turn to act and they shove chips at the pot, regardless of their intent of those chips, that's a bet. And a pretty important rule is the bet speaks for itself. Well, he took his chips. He moved them all the way forward. It was his turn to act. You got to add more perspective to this and context. If we have to write a report for a gaming agent or surveillance or compliance, we're going to look at the footage and see that when it was somebody's turn to act, he moved chips forward.
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to explain to the gaming commission or any other relevant person, like they're 5 years old, how this is anything other than a call of the bet. Well, we're pretty much stuck. It was a person's turn to act. An act was made. At that point, we don't have to guess intention, and we're not supposed to guess intention. The bet does speak for itself. It was the player's turn to act. The chips were moved forward to the pot. They were then released. Those are very simple conditions that were met. That bet stands. I'm sorry about the result, Dane. I mean, he obviously probably, as drunk as you described, probably should have been sent packing already.
So the question that I got from this too was with him asking the dealer to count his chips. I've never seen anyone ever ask a dealer to count their chips. You know, I've always seen them ask for a count of someone right. else's chips, but
I'm glad the dealer stood their ground. They're not supposed to. It's not their job nor responsibility to stack up somebody's chips, drunk or otherwise.
Right.
We make special accommodation for those who obviously need it, somebody missing fingers or appendages, and we will help in those spots, of course.
Sure.
Drunk is not a state that needs to be accommodated.
Right.
Other than calling Uber.
Exactly. So then once we get past, you know, the that part of it, when he pushes the chips forward, and I understand what you're saying from the surveillance standpoint, mm-hmm. but when you if you were in that situation and you come over, are you making a ruling just based on what you see? Do you ask about intent?
I will get information. Obviously, the visual information in poker is very important. It's a fairly visual game. That doesn't mean there's not other context and information that can't be provided by the players at the table. And I absolutely get it from them. I get it from the dealer first, always. Then I get it from the players in turn. And when something's unclear, then obviously we have to rely on the rules and the information and possibly our judgment of things. When things are fairly simple or can appear to be simple or explained simply, we got to go with it.
Right.
There's just there's just no gaming agent or commission that is going to look at this footage and get the story from the dealer or the tournament director and decide that this wasn't a bet. There's just no way. I haven't been around several jurisdictions and casinos and a lot of players and tournament directors. At some point, even though you have information that answers questions A, B, C, D, and E,
right,
the answers to questions A and B will pretty much tell you to stop.
Yeah.
You've satisfied major conditions, you're done, move on to the next hand. That was it. Player, question one, was it his turn to act? Yes. Question two, did he move chips to the pot? Yes. All right, well, and it renders everything else after that virtually irrelevant.
Sure, because I could see where, and I don't think it was the case in this situation, but I could see where something like that could be used as an angle shoot. Like, you know, well, that wasn't my intention, you know, after the fact.
Exactly.
So I get where you would have to rule on one and two, like you said, play A and B.
Let's turn this around. Say a guy is not drunk, but is laughing hysterically. Call? No, I was just making a joke. I wasn't saying a call. I was just a joke. No, I'm sorry. It was your turn to act. You said call. We're done here. Well, that was my intention. Once again, question one, was it your turn? Question two, did you make an action or verbal declaration in turn? Yes. Stop. Process over. No questions need to be asked nor answered. That process applies a lot in poker, and especially in situations like this. The conditions were met.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Otherwise, the angles get shot all the time.
Yeah. And yeah, like I said, you know, that was my first thought when I read this, is I could see where this could turn into an angle shoot. And I don't think, like I said, I don't think that was the case in this one, but I could see where it definitely could be, for sure.
I'm feeling badly that he made the call in that spot with the tens, even though he may not have wanted to. I'm not 100% on that. But the ruling was correct. I mean, it was his turn to act. The chips made it to the pot. It's sometimes you got to keep things simple. Otherwise, it gets very dicey.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like you said, Elliot, if he didn't intend to call, then sorry that it turned out that way. But I feel like he might have called anyway.
The overriding principle when we make a decision, and I announce this generally, especially at major events, and I tell them, folks, if I have to read your mind, this will not end well.
That's fair, yeah. All right, well, Dane, I appreciate you sending that in. If you have you or anyone else has a call the floor that they would like Elliot to go through, then send it to podcast@anyupmagazine.com. Elliot, I appreciate you being here again.
You're welcome, Joe. Glad to do it. And again, listeners, keep them coming in. These have been getting really good. I appreciate this quite a bit.
Let's break it down with Hand of the Week.
All right, here we are. Another Hand of the Week. Patrick, you're here with me this week.
We're here this week. We're having a little technical difficulties at the other home office, so we're joining in together. So. It's good to be here. I like this. It's a great setup. It's much better than mine. We're much more professional. So
I feel like I'm looking at you this way, though. So because if I look at you here, then it's like I'm not looking at the camera, so I don't know which way to go.
We're just going
to
mess with everyone as we go about this, including ourselves, because I can look at you this way and I can look at you this way as well.
Yeah, and so then I've got a second screen. And I'm actually editing over there and I'm on that screen, too.
God, we do have a lot of fun, though.
Yeah.
We do have a lot of fun.
Well, this hand is kind of fun, too.
Nice.
This hand, it was sent in by Tate Whitney. And he says that, I played an interesting hand last night at the end of a long session.
Come.
Which is, he says he played for 7 hours. And this was at the end of a 7-hour session. He said he wanted to get our opinion on his thought process throughout the hand.
Okay.
So background says he's been playing for 7 hours. I'm getting ready to rack up with a small profit. I'm going to leave before my next big blind, and I'm under the gun plus one.
Okay.
The villain has been at my table for a large chunk of the session. He's a younger kid, loose passive. He sat down with $100, doubled up against me early with 5-6 offsuit after calling my open when I had queen-queen. Then he ran his stack up to about $1,000.
It's a good little run for the young villain.
So he started, he's in for 100, out for 1,000 at this point. After hitting multiple sets and getting paid, he's been trying to play pots with me in position, but I don't feel like he's targeting me or anything, just playing loose-ish. So onto the hand. Pre-flop, under the gun straddles to 5. We are under the gun plus 1, and we look down at the ace of clubs, king of spades. What are you going to do with that?
All right, so for the novice out there, remind me, because you're teaching me poker as we go a little bit. So when you say that he straddles for 5, so that's before anyone sees a card.
Right.
All no, right.
Yeah. Before it was even dealt to him, he beautiful. Put out okay. his $5. Yeah.
Well, under the gun plus 1, I mean, I definitely want to play, so I'm at least calling the 5. To play, and then I would probably go from there. But that's, again, my little bit of my strategy. We like to call.
We're calling again. We're calling
because I want to play. I am curious to see how this might be handled, though, because I do like to play a lot of hands, me personally. So I'm curious to see what he ends up doing.
Well, he says, I open to 15. The villain calls, and under the gun calls. So he doesn't say where villain is, but you've got 3 players in the hand, so pot's $48. So my thoughts on this from your standpoint and from Tate's standpoint. One, you definitely have to raise.
Explain to me why, though, because I was curious, because when he said then he opened to 15, I'm like, man, I missed something. So someone straddled to 5, correct? Is that what he said?
The straddle was 5.
5, yeah. Okay. All right.
So you definitely need to come in. If somebody is straddling, they haven't seen their cards. So that $5 out there means nothing. You've got to push the action a little bit with the ace king.
Fair enough. So, I'm following.
And Tate, I don't think, opens for enough. So he opens for 15, which is 3x,
yeah.
Right?
But ace-king, you could probably go 5.
I want to go at least $20 to $25.
Okay.
So 4 to 5
four
times.
4 to 5, okay. Yeah.
And Tate says his analysis, which is what he was saying he wanted help with, his analysis on his play says, nothing much here. I contemplate opening 15 or 20.
So he's not far off from you.
And just settle on 15 based on the table dynamics throughout the night. Okay, so he's using...
Yeah, he's been there. He's seen it. So that could affect.
Under the gun had lost large pots against the villain and has let him know, quote unquote, he's going to get all his money. I love that Tate puts in here, spoiler alert, he did not.
Hey, shout out to you, Mike. I'm coming back for my money.
Yeah.
So this is you, Mike. You're the villain.
There has been virtually no 3-bets all night. So I think their ranges both can be very wide here, especially under the gun. So that's his thought there. Now your flop comes out. And this is an interesting flop. Ace of diamonds, 10 of diamonds, 6 of diamonds, and under the gun checks.
That's a lot of diamonds. And they're not my best friend right now with the holding ace club and king of spades.
That's true.
I mean, obviously, all right, well, we pair up our aces right out the gate. That's awesome. The flush draw, I mean, it scares the bejesus out of you right out the gate. We got checked too?
Yeah, under the gun checks.
All right, well, you already put the bet out there. You put the aces up. I mean, you still I think you still bet at least. Pot, what'd you say pot was 46?
48.
I'm probably going 25 bet.
Okay.
So I'm pushing a little bit. For me, thought process wise, I'm finding out who is either got the flush or they're chasing a little bit, or at least that's my thought process. I might find out. I've got top pair. I've got the king kicker. Like, let's go.
Well, I will say this. That's good because it sounds like you've started to pick up on the idea that this is information, right? We're trying to get information throughout the hand.
Yep.
So I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Tate bets 30. So
all right,
pretty close to the same. The villain thinks for about 2 minutes and raises to 60. The under the gun folds.
So it's just me and the villain now?
It's just you and the villain. So here's, I'll say this first of all. Tate described him early on as loose passive.
Okay. My take on loose passive, before you go down that route, my take is, okay, so he's a little freewheeling, but he's kind of, he's not pushing a whole lot of the action. So now all of a sudden he is pushing the action.
Exactly.
So my thought process is one of two things. He's got his flush and he's going to get himself paid again, or he's trying to make it seem like he does have the flush and he's not there yet.
Right. Loose passive, I feel like, is alarm bells have to be going off to some degree, because loose passive is not a player that's going to raise here. But he does seem like the type of player that would be like, well, that's a scary board. Let's push the action because it's a scary board to begin with. So, yeah, the alarm bells going off for sure. But I think in my case, I would probably go ahead and call here. But, yeah, the alarm bells, proceed with caution.
I think if you don't have top pair, at least from my point of view, if I don't have top pair with a king kicker, I'm probably not going, but I am calling here. I'm going to call him and see next cards.
Yeah, for sure. All right.
Did Tate say what he did?
Tate calls as well. Okay. After he says, I call after about 30 seconds. So pot is around 168 now.
Come.
Okay. He says, I decided to lead for 2/3 pot. Maybe could have sized up more given the wet monotone texture. Huh. It's interesting. That part right there is interesting to me, because with a wet monotone texture, I would actually size down, because sizing up just isolates you against flush draws and flushes. So sizing up isn't going to get you anywhere, I don't feel like. So that's interesting thought process there. When the villain raises, I start to try and build a range for what he could have. I'm losing to 10-10, 6-6, ace-6, ace-10, and all flushes, which I think can all be in his range pre-flop.
Yeah.
Okay. He says, hands I'm beating are all weaker aces and pair plus flush draws.
Yeah.
Given the small sizing of the raise and the history between villain and under the gun, I think he may be raising just to scare out the under the gun and decide to call and see a turn. So that was his thought process.
That makes sense.
The turn is then the 6 of clubs. So the board is the ace of diamonds, 10 of diamonds, 6 of diamonds, 6 of clubs. So now you have aces and sixes with a king kicker, and you're first to act.
Well, if he's already got the flush, then we're still in the exact same scenario we were. If he's chasing the flush, he missed again. So that's great on that one. Obviously, if he's got a six in his hand, you know, we were done anyways. You know, that definitely doesn't make anything better. If I'm first to act here, he pushed the action the last time we called the raise, correct?
Yeah. So you bet he raised and you called his raise.
I am, I'm not pushing the action here. I check. Okay. That, you know, after seeing that, there's enough possibilities out there to lose. I don't want to go into it with a loser mentality. I still have top pair and sixes, but I check to see how he plays it.
Sure. Makes sense.
Come.
He says, I check, and Billing quickly leads for 100.
So, quick thought is he's pushing the action again. He's either got his flush, or at least in my opinion, he's chasing it still. I don't know that the six necessarily helps him. Maybe it does, but I think I would even see a bigger bet than that if he had a six. Top pair, I would still call.
Okay. It takes away the hands that we listed out, right? Tens, sixes, probably takes away the sixes, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. I mean, he could still have.
I mean, he's got quads.
Yeah, but he made
him.
Quads. Yeah. But yeah. Probably takes away ace six.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it takes away some of those hands you were afraid of, but.
You still have the flush out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just feel like when a, as he explained it, loose passive player in a 1-2 game, and I think that's an important piece of this too, is we're playing 1-2. So that type of player is rarely bluffing at this point, right?
True.
So I think that plays a role there. I feel like I'm folding there. That's what I would do. I would fold.
Because he probably has his flush, or you're making him on his flush.
Yeah. He's got something. I would assume it's a flush. Definitely could have a small flush for sure.
Yeah.
However, the board pairs. So if you're going to push the action rather than calling,
maybe
you
push them.
You got a raise there, in my opinion. It's either a fold or you're gonna. If that's a scare card for him, then make it a scare card for him. You know, that's my thought. Tate says I call. So the pot's $368 now. Okay. His analysis for his reason for calling. This is a pretty great card for me, he says, as it reduces the combos of A6 and pocket sixes, which was what we said.
Yeah.
Also, pairs the board, which may scare Villain in the case Villain flopped a small flush. When he quickly bets 100, I think given the turn, which is unlikely to improve him, and ensures that I am most likely not drawing dead now, I can call or maybe even raise. Yes, I agree, but you should have raised.
Yeah.
I just decide to call and keep in bluffs, as I'm not sure he would call with only a flush draw given my aggression. But, I mean, that's a pretty decent sized pot. You're getting ready to leave for the night. If he folds, I would take it. So that's my thought. So he calls. The river is the king of hearts. So now you've got a better two pair. You have three pair.
Give me the three pair all day long. Oh, we've got top two pair on the board.
So again, now the board is the ace of diamonds, 10 of diamonds, 6 of diamonds, 6 of clubs, king of hearts.
And I'm holding ace of clubs, king of spades.
Right.
I got to tell you, I already have buyer's remorse. I should have folded. I should have folded after the turn. We're a minute and a half later, and I really should have folded. Because at this point, I see this, and I'm first to act, correct?
Yeah.
I got to push. Because if I don't, then he's going to again. All signs point to he's going to again. At least that's my thought process.
When you say push, are you shoving? Are you going all in?
I'm not going all in because I still want to walk
away.
I got
away. Excited.
Sorry, I used the wrong terminology.
Oh, my gosh.
but along those lines, and maybe it is. And because Tate never told us how much we had, correct?
That's true.
But, I mean, he's talking about going home for the night. We're in for a lot now. And as I've learned through these hands and playing against Joe and Mike, is that if I don't push here, then if he's got his flush or whatever, then he's pushing. I mean, excuse me. He is going to come back big against me. So if I don't go in big now, so if the pot, so we were at 168, both of us were at 100. So 368, you said, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, if I have enough
my
chips
are over here, so I keep looking over here.
If I have enough chips, I'm probably going to the pot's 368. I'm probably going half. I'm probably or over half. I'm probably pushing 150 or 175 if I have those, because I have top two pair, and yeah, the only thing that beats me now, at least that I'm thinking, is a flush. And if he comes, if he's got the flush, he's going to re-raise me, would be my guess, right?
If it's a small flush, he's probably not.
Okay.
I mean, he's got to be worried a little bit of a full house if he has a flush with the board paired.
So, I'm hoping to put, well, yeah.
So if you put the pressure on him, and this is what I was saying on the turn, is if it's truly a scare card, if you believe that's a scare card for him, you have to push it. Make it scary.
All right, so I'm having this thought process one card late.
Yeah.
That's pretty much where I'm at.
Yes.
I feel like I've got more bullets in the chamber having ace-king, but I'm doing it late because nothing's changed for him. At least that we're thinking. He's right in the exact same boat. So, well, yeah, so I'm pushing 150. I don't know what Tate ended up doing. Big. I'm going big 150. What did Tate end up doing?
Tate checked. Tate checked again. Okay. And the villain leads out quickly for 200.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he's got his flush and I'm done. Well, what
this is why position is so critical in poker, because being the first to act changes so much, right?
Yeah.
If you are second to act, if you're in the villain's position, the game's a little bit easier. You get to see what the other person's doing. So he checked, villain led for 200, you folded.
Yeah.
Tate says, I ended up calling.
Oh, bold move.
And he had the Queen of Diamonds, 10 of Hearts, and he scooped.
Whoa. Two golf claps for you, Tate. Well done, sir. I mean, that's a takedown. The guy had Queen of Diamonds, so he was chasing his flush.
Yeah.
And it would have been a bigger flush because ace, queen, king, or ace, queen, 10.
Right. There would have been a king that could have beat him, but king. That would have been it, really.
And then he paired the board as well. He had two pair of tens and sixes is what ultimately came down to.
Yeah.
Wow. Well done, Tate.
So he says, I try not to be results oriented, so I appreciate the discussion on this hand. I can see this is probably a fold under most circumstances. In the moment, he just didn't look comfortable, and that pushed me toward a call after tanking. So he was using a live read, which is different for sure. If that's the case, that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the call if you're using a live read at the moment. I think anything without that live read, anything other than snap folding is just punting your money away in most cases. But if you have a live read, then great. I'm glad that it worked out. But yeah, that's it. Glad you took it down.
Yeah. Good hand.
Yeah.
Glad you didn't go home one hand earlier.
That means, that means you ended the night even better than you thought it was going to be. So good job. Kudos. And
the young villain got taken for some of his money back.
Yeah. Cause he had beat him in a hand earlier
with
the 5-6 offsuit. Yeah, that's right. Very good, Tate. I appreciate that. If anybody has a hand that they would like Patrick and I to go through, send it to podcast@annieupmagazine.com. Patrick?
As a pleasure as always.
Always.
Cheers, everybody.
The question is, how you running?
All right, Todd Lemansky is our LA ambassador, and he's here with us this week to talk about the goings-on there in LA. Todd, how you running?
Well, Joe, in honor of my T-shirt today, I'm going to quote last week's episode of Ted Lasso, and some days you win, some days you lose, but most of the time you just tie. So let's say I'm kind of right in the middle. Obviously, we know that the Royals have been doing terrible.
Oh,
however,
yeah.
That said, the United States just made the quarterfinals in the under 20 World Cup for the fifth straight time, and are currently outscoring our opponents 10-0 throughout the tournament. We've yet to concede a goal. So
wow! I did not know that.
Yeah, so that's we beat Fiji yesterday or the day before 4-0.
Wow.
Yeah. New Zealand. Excuse me. We beat Fiji 3-0 a few days before that. So. So one good one, one bad one. I also played the Milestone Mega Satellite for the Gardens WPT event, and I pushed all in with Queen 10 offsuit with a short stack and got called by Ace Queen, but I rivered a straight. Then I busted the tournament when I shoved my 15 big blinds with 5-6 suited from the button, and the small blind woke up with pocket jacks, and I did not improve. So another win and a loss, so evens out into a tie, just like Ted Lasso's mom told him on last week's episode.
That's true, yes.
So that's why I got the USA hat on today, but I still wore the Kansas City shirt so we could represent, which, by the way, this shirt is Ted Lasso has worn it on the show a couple of times, in the pilot and in last week's episode.
I did not notice that. I'll have to go back and watch because I watched last night's episode, or I watched today's episode last night. I watched it and I did not notice the shirt. So I'll have to go back and check that out.
He wore this in the pilot. And when I was Ted Lasso for Halloween, that's why I ended up buying the shirt because it's part of my costume. But basically Jason Sudeikis is from Kansas City. So yes. This shirt is like a portmanteau of the four major barbecue spots in Kansas City. So we got Oklahoma Joe's, Arthur Bryant's, Gates, and Jack Stack. It's by a company called 3KC. And like I said, if you go back and watch last week's episode, when he wakes up and his mom's gone, this is the shirt that he's wearing when he's sleeping on the couch. So.
All right.
Anyway, I guess on to poker, rather. So.
Yes. So let's start with, there's a pretty good tournament happening. Let's start there and break that down for us.
Yeah, we might as well start with the WPT that just wrapped for the Gardens. Like I said, I played the Mega Satellite, but did not get a seat. I thought it was pretty interesting because of the six final table, their official final table in the WPT, five of the six players live in Southern California, and the one that lives in Vegas was actually born and raised in California. So it was like an all local final table. And with the exception of one guy, Chris Lee, who got third place, everybody else, it was pretty much their biggest score ever. Chris Lee, he's a bracelet winner. He had about $1.5 million tournament earnings coming in. And that was more than the rest of the final table combined. So this guy, Kai Nguyen, he's a high stakes cash game regular, he's known as Suited Superman. And he posts a lot of hands and his exploits and stuff on Instagram. And that was his first WPT title and his largest tournament score ever. His previous best was $53,303 that he got in a $240 event at the 2016 Liz Flint Fall Poker Classic. And he got $357,380 for first place. So that's I thought that was a pretty, pretty nice bump to his resume. And the guy that got second, his name was Ryan Slung, or maybe Slunga. He notched his best haul of his career, $230,000 for second. His lifetime tournament earnings coming into the final table were $31,105. And his previous biggest cash was came from a survivor at the earlier this year at the LAPC and for $4,000. So he kind of blew away his best too. And he also got in on the $600 or on one of the $600 satellites that I played. I don't know if it was the same one or not, but he satellited in too.
So he got in for 600.
In for 600, out for 230K.
Wow.
On a 52-50 buy-in. So that was. Now, it should be said that both of those guys do play a lot of cash games, so it's not like they're like total noobs,
Right.
But tournament poker and cash games poker is they're two different animals.
Yeah.
We already mentioned Chris Lee. The other thing that was kind of cool was the WPT ambassador Brad Owen, who was sitting next to me in the Mega Satellite. He got fourth place. And it was his first six-figure score as well. He's been a professional for 13 years, but he just kind of started playing tournaments, I think, pretty recently. And him and this other guy, Andrew Neamy, who did not cash, but they were on all of the marketing materials, on the website, the posters in the poker room and everything. So it's kind of cool that this guy, the two of them signed last year as WPT ambassadors, and they'd be going around all over the world playing these low stakes cash games with their fans, on social media.
Yeah.
And stuff. So it was kind of cool. He made it too,
Yeah, that is cool. They have a lot of meetup games that they tout on YouTube and all too.
So I played with him for a little while during that satellite, and he was a really nice guy. So like I was glad to see good things for him. Joseph DeLuca, he max late regged day 1B, rode a single bullet all the way to fifth place. He's another pro. He usually plays PLOA cash games, and he was hoping to earn enough for a down payment on a house. And I'm guessing that 94K probably hit the mark.
Pretty good down payment.
His previous largest cash was $18,500 in a $175 event at the 2019 WPT Gardens Poker Festival. So also the Gardens a few years back, but five times he like 5x'd his best score too.
Good.
And then one last one I thought was interesting. Well, I should say the last to round out the final table. 52-year-old Huntington Beach native Josh Lockman. He came to the final table under the gun with exactly three big blinds. two hands later, he's got 8-3 suited in the big blind against Salunga's suited ace 9. Did not improve, but the $71,200 nearly doubled his $96,637 in lifetime tournament earnings coming in. So I thought that was really cool how, pretty much everybody except for the bracelet winner were all they're all like their biggest scores. A pretty significant increase to their tournament resume earnings.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Absolutely.
Then other notable players who cashed included Daniel Strelitz in 23rd. Daniel, you might remember, is the guy that knocked me out of the horse tournament a couple months back. But again, nice kid. Josh Pollock, who got 37th. And Frank the Tank Stepachin, who got 42nd. I don't know if you know who Frank the Tank is, but he's quite a loud and boisterous character. He plays the bike a lot. Great guy. He's always got a rubber chicken at his at the table with him. He has got like the Danielson hooking like headband on. very lively player. So he won one. He won a WPT a few years ago too. So he's segue into the commerce. The last time I was on the show, I was mentioning that they had run their California State Poker Championship, which is since concluded. And Sean Yu was crowned champion in both horse tournaments, the $400 and the $600 one. So, and he also was in the mixed game championship that I played in the bike. So, But I'm always mentioning him, but it's because he's a good guy and he plays a lot of poker in LA, and he's a great player. So his name comes up in the results quite frequently.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that happens when you're cashing all the time, then you get the mentions for sure.
And he also got 17th in the $1,200 main event at the CSPC at the Commerce too. So, I mean, not just some people play hold'em and they suck at mixed games, and some of the people that play mixed games don't really play hold'em that well, and here's a guy that, you know, can just about play everything.
Does everything, yeah. That's a true solid poker player right there.
And he is, for sure. And like I said, he's a really nice guy. So, you know, I always love to see good people do well.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to give a couple more shout outs. And that main event, Keith, they actually did a 4-way chop. Keith Schiller, he took home the first place honors. 59,560 of the original 80.1K payout. So. And then Steve Austin, not Stone Cold, but Stephen Austin from Indio, California. He finished second for 53K, which was more or less the same as the posted prize, which was 52,190. And then Dylan Nahor from San Diego got 46K. And Sammy Bechahed, who we mentioned the last time I was on the podcast.
Yeah.
He finished fourth and collected 41K. And then I also want to give a shout out to Ronnie Bardaw, who's been a friend of mine since pretty much since I got into poker. He finished 32nd, but he's notable for anybody that doesn't know. He's the only poker player who's ever cashed the main event 5 consecutive times. So that's like his record. And he's since won a bracelet in limit hold'em, which is his preferred game.
Okay. I knew about the caches. I didn't know that he had won a bracelet. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, it was several years back he won his bracelet, but... But like I said, he's one of the first people I met in poker, so we've got to give him a shout out. And again, like I always like to see good people do well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Linda Tran, she got first in the 08 stud 8. And Duke Viveros got sixth place in the 600 horse that Sean Yu won. I only mention him because he was also at the final table with me here a few weeks back, where he got third in the mixed game championship. And Frankie Odell got second place in the $400 horse, and I only mentioned that because Frankie knocked me out of that when I put in my last 4 big bets with pocket kings and 7-card stud. He had pocket queens, and he boated up on the river, and I only made trips. And see you later. So.
Right.
And then the last thing I just wanted to mention was at the Commerce, they also ran a $400 mystery bounty, which is kind of all the rage these days, mystery bounties.
Yeah, these are fun. Popular. I do enjoy seeing them.
But just to give the listeners an idea, if they've never played one, what kind of makes them interesting. So the mystery bounty had 551 entries, generating a prize pool of $187,340. Fausto Valdez from Long Beach, LBC. He got first place for 24,860. But here's where it gets interesting. Joseph Gargulio from Port Charlotte, Florida got second for 28,765. So even though he got second, he actually made more money than first place because of the mystery bounties. I mean, I guess theoretically that could happen in a bounty tournament. When you're only getting $50, $100, $500 bounties, it'd be kind of hard to close that gap between second and first. So.
Yeah, some of them, you just go over to a bag, pull one out. Is that what they did?
I wasn't there for this one. What we did with the bike is we got like a big like raffle barrel, and like all of them, they're double envelopes, so nobody can like, you know, peek through and maybe see which one is the big one. And you know, they just reach in and grab an envelope and open it up, and it's got the dollar amount on it. For anybody that doesn't know, the way the mystery bounty works is the mystery bounties don't kick in until you're already in the money. So at that point, obviously the field's a lot smaller, and I mean, the tournament almost stops. Like everybody, you know, you're 3 or 4 tables there. Like somebody goes up at the, you know, I think we had a 50K big one, you know, the one that they ran at the Venetian or the World Series or something last year. I think they had a $1 million one. And
oh wow,
but you know, everybody's kind of like holding their breath to see, you know, like what he drew. So it's kind of fun too, you know. It's got that little like deal or no deal kind of.
That's true. It does,
because kind of have that, because feel. Obviously you don't want to see the 50,000 in the suitcase, because that means you can't win it anymore. You know what I mean? So right. You know, you don't want somebody else in the tournament pulling the 50K for the same reason, because obviously it's not in there anymore for you to pull out.
But, right.
It makes for a really fun tournament.
So let me ask you this from a strategy standpoint, kind of off topic here a little bit, but from a strategy standpoint, if you see the 50,000 go, do you play to push somebody? Do you try to gather the bounty as hard as if you know it's still there?
Well, I haven't thought about this too extensively, but I think it would also depend on what other bounties had been pulled, because when we had a 50K bounty, we also had a 10K bounty in there still. So in that regard, you might still try to push it. But I personally think that, I don't know, it's tough. This is where the mystery bounties like actually kind of change things up a lot, right? Because in a typical bounty tournament, it's just like, I think you just kind of play your game. And if you get a bounty, it's just like, just gravy. But I mean, you pull the right mystery bounty and you can end up with more than first place money, like, you know, or right. Maybe not first. I mean, depending on the bounties, but like you can get first or you can get top three money and, you know, and a min cash basically.
Yeah. I mean, if you
change it.
Yeah. If you had one of the big ones, like you were talking about with the $1 million bounty, then I mean, you could get significant money just by knocking a player out. It might be worth it to push then. So the strategy becomes way different.
Yeah.
Just interesting.
Although here's the other thing to consider. Much like Deal or No Deal, where ultimately, you know, if you go all the way to the end, whatever is in your own suitcase is what you win. If you win the tournament, you're still going to get your own bounty. So if nobody else has drawn it, you could still have. It's not that you're like out of the running necessarily.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of a mixed bag, because the more people that draw that miss the big bounties, the higher the odds are that there's bigger bounties left in there.
Right.
I mean, there's like so much to unpack there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it's so interesting to me. These mystery bounties that have become, like you said, become the rage. I am fascinated by the strategy for these.
Yeah, similar to the mystery bounty is I've been trying to get us to run one at the bike, and I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon, but a progressive bounty is similar to a mystery bounty. I don't know if you're familiar with a progressive bounty, but just for those listening at home that might not be, basically when you knock somebody out, you get half of their bounty. The other half gets added to yours. So if we're starting with, let's just say for round numbers, $100 bounties, I knock somebody out, I'm going to get $50, and now I'm worth 150.
Right.
You know, and then I knock somebody else out, you know, maybe they're worth 200. Now I get 100 of theirs, and now I'm worth 250. And so you create this situation, which I guess is slightly different from the mystery bounty, because you know where the big money is in this case, where you could be down to, you know, two tables, and the short stack could be worth more than second place money. So at that point, you know, you might be, you know, if he's all in, you might be calling with any two cards just for a shot at his bounty, you know, like depending on your chip stack.
That's true. Another thing to think about with the mystery bounty though, is if you knock somebody out and you pull the big one, whether it's 10K or 50K or whatever, you pull the big one, maybe you're playing a little more loosey goosey, because you're like, I already made my, I'm on house money now.
Yeah. You know? Well, yeah. And like I said too, like the one at the series where they had $1 million one, if there's $1 million big bounty, there's probably like $250,000 one in there too. So just because somebody pulls that $1 million one doesn't mean that all hope is lost at that point either. So I don't know. It's definitely something to think about, because it's just looking at the payouts on this mystery bounty just really got my brain going. Because like I said, I'm gonna give a shout out to Derek Kwan, who plays at the bike a lot. His fifth place was good for 69.10, but sixth place got 15,160 and ninth place got 13.2K. First one out at the final table, like, you know, made almost double what he did just because of these booster bounties, you know? And then Eugene Tito got fourth place for 10,925. So I just want to give a shout out to Eugene too, because he's another one of our bike rigs. So. But very good. It's the mystery bounties. They're cool.
It's fun. It's definitely fun.
I gotta get in on one of those pretty soon here for sure.
Yeah.
The only other thing I got is that for the first time in recent memory, the bike has canceled their annual summer series. So there's no summer series starting up this week because they're going to be remodeling the casino. So we're going to be back. Legends of Poker usually runs the whole month of August. We might start it a week or two early to try to make up for that, or maybe run it into September, like a few days. But as of right now, the dates are still to be determined. So you just have to go to thebike.com and just check back. And, you know, as soon as the schedule's out, the dates are finalized. And, you know, you can find all of that info and the structures there. But just got to throw that out there to anybody that was looking forward to it. So obviously I've got some more some unexpected free time on my hands for the summer. maybe I can actually sneak away to the series and play one of these mystery bounties at the series or at the Venetian or the Wynn, one of these places. Since I got no work lined up now for June and the first 2 weeks of July.
All right. Well, listen, Todd, I appreciate you jumping on, and let us know when there's anything else happening, and we'll get you on again.
Yeah, I'll definitely let you know as soon as the dates for the Legends of Poker are finalized.
And if you jump down into Vegas and you play in a couple of games down there, then let me know.
Oh, yeah, definitely the mystery bounty is on my list.
All right. Sounds good. All right, Todd, I appreciate you.
All right, Joe, always a pleasure. Take it easy, man.
Let's take a time out to talk strategy in the Coach's Corner.
All right, Mark Goodbeats Brimmett has been a poker coach for over 15 years. He's been a strategy columnist for AnyUp for years as well. And now he joins me each week to talk a little strategy. Mark, how you doing?
Doing great, but don't forget, Joe, I was a mad gamer for about 20 years, too.
That's true.
I mean, I played a million hands live and a million hands online. So, yes, I love coaching. Don't play very often now, but I'm very active on advanced poker training where I coach my students as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I love the updates that we talk about on there with the Madness Cup and different weekly games that you play in. I love those.
Dude, I'm interrupting you. Did you try the Madness Cup?
I have not tried it.
It starts on the first, but did you try the weekly?
I haven't.
The weekly challenge?
I haven't. I will get in there and do it.
Okay, you will note, though, that I am ranked first.
Okay.
That's number one in the weekly challenge, and they average the last 4 weeks and see who has the highest average amongst the exercises. And in the weekly challenge, the last one was playing the big blind, and the one before that was playing strong hands. And then, you know, they do different things like pocket jacks, playing ace queen, and it's really interesting because you start with 1,000 chips, you don't get a reload, and wow, it's a lot of fun.
Good deal. I definitely need to check it out. Time is of the essence.
Okay, well, I just want to personally throw down the gauntlet because I think you're not playing it because you're scared of me.
That's all right. Game on. Game on.
Okay.
All right. Well, before we get into that, we have to talk a little bit about pocket jacks because that's what we promised last week. So I'm just gonna start, you know, pocket jacks being everybody's favorite to play, of course. So I'm going to turn it over to you, and you give us a little bit of background with pocket jacks. Where do we start with those?
In 1997, when I read a newspaper article written by Daniel Negreanu. He used to have a syndicated column in Reuters, and one of the columns was Pocket Jacks, Play 'em Like Pocket Eights. I got to tell you, I think Daniel's right, as usual. And it's just a hand that a lot of players, experts, advanced, intermediate, and beginners have a lot of problems with.
Yeah.
They seem to get people broke. Why? Why do you think, Joe?
I think people get a little excited because they see them as face cards, so they will overplay a little bit. I'm of the school that if I'm going to raise in my position, then I'm going to raise the same amount, whether I have pocket jacks or I have pocket tens or I have pocket aces. That's not what's making my decision. And so many people get scared of pocket jacks, so they raise more. Because they just want everybody to fold, get out of my way because it's pocket jacks. I don't want to play them. So they play them differently than if you just see them as a pocket pair. There's just, you know, like you said, pocket eights. It plays kind of the same way.
Okay, well, full disclosure, if you hear the cat in the background, I'm trying to brush him, multitask while we're doing this, but that's done because he's not cooperating. But in case this goes on YouTube, this is Bo Salo. Anyway, so get out of here, Bo. Anyway, so we're going to disagree a little bit here and agree. I love your raising style, that you're going to raise straight across the same way. I want to go back to set mining with the jacks and then talk about watching Durr last night on a YouTube video that one of my poker students sent me. Three bet with sevens. Why are you three betting with sevens against Doug Polk of all people?
Right. We just talked about not doing that. So.
Yeah. It's because they have 500 big blinds deep. They got $1 million in front of them. It just changes the equation. And I keep telling students and poker experts like yourself and everybody I speak to, it's like my loudest message. There's a sign on the wall that says, size matters. but here's the thing. When you're an intermediate player and you're watching these silly hands on YouTube, and I do mean it, you know, they're not realistic to what you're trying to learn. So if you're watching YouTube for entertainment, that's great. But most poker players who are watching these greatest players in the world, I'm not kidding you, they thump me. You know, I'm not trying to say I'm all that. What I am trying to say is that when you're that deep, it's great to three bet. You have a lot of leeway to do a lot of different things. But if you're in a 1-2 game with $140 in front of you, and somebody makes it $10 to go, and you think, oh, well, I watched Dermot, you know, three bet to 40, and then the other guy goes to 120, and you're all in. It's like there's no game.
Right.
So I just want to emphasize to people that listen to this podcast because they're interested in poker. You're not listening to this podcast if you're not interested in upping your game.
Right.
Be careful of the YouTube videos. So you should be set mining with your sevens and not overplaying your jacks. You should be playing your jacks to hit the set, just like you do pocket eights.
Yeah, okay. So when you are dealt pocket jacks, you're in middle position, one limper is my favorite scenario. I think I gave the same scenario last week for some reason. but your middle position, pocket jacks, one limper, you're just going to call?
Absolutely, and be able to call, hopefully, and be able to call a raise to see if you can catch your set and use the criteria we talked about last week of making sure the effective stack is big enough whereby if you do hit your set, you'll be able to really cash in big, because we like big pots.
Right. And we cannot lie. Yeah. okay, so how big of a raise can we then match? I mean, I don't want to get too technical there, but if there...
No, that's fine. That's fine. Guy may, you know, limper, and we limp, well, we limp along. And by the way, I don't ever limp. If anybody plays against me, if I'm limping, you can almost bet, hey, Mark's got a pocket pair. I'll even raise a connector. You know, I mean, I have a wide range. But I just, to repeat last week, winners and losers over the course of a year often comes down to how we play or misplay our pairs. And pocket jacks is a big one. So we limped, a guy with $100 in front of him makes it $17 to go. And we look at his small stack, and it's not worth playing because we're not getting paid off if we hit our set. We're looking for big odds. So a lot of players go the wrong way. They go, oh, I can't get hurt too much. I'll just go all in with this guy. Or they say, I call. Well, you're supposed to be set mining. You're supposed to be able to crack bigger pairs, maybe, you know, take down an ace king or something like that, let him overplay. But the point is, we want to try to get in and see a flop with our medium pairs. And I don't put jacks as a premium pair, queens, kings, and aces. I cannot put jacks in that category. So we want to go back to the default of we're set mining. And we want to make sure if we're playing against a raise, that guy's stack, effective stack, and our effective stack are big enough whereby it's going to be a nice juicy pot if we hit.
Right. That makes sense. So you said...
You know, jacks will hold up on their own once in a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a decent pair for sure. I agree with you. I wouldn't necessarily put it there in the premiums, but it is definitely a good pair. But you said that we were going to disagree a little bit and you were going to agree with me a little bit. So you agreed with me putting in that raise, the same raise across the board. Where did you disagree with me?
Oh, thanks for the clarification. If you're going to raise, I don't agree with raising the jacks coming in. Maybe you didn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that we're sticking to a set mining strategy. Now, of course, we have to play a balanced game. Of course, we're going to mix it up a little, especially if we're playing with the same group every Friday night. Okay, so you got to bring your A game. And you know what? We haven't even gotten into the tournament versus cash. But the point I'm trying to make here is part of the deal is not getting broke with those jacks. And we have to play them as if they were eights.
Right. So there's kind of a thin line there, right, between your stack and the person who raises stack. Because,
Joe, let me cut you off right there. Whatever the lower stack is between the two stacks is what we call the effective stack.
Sure.
I know you know that.
But we don't want to go broke with jacks, so we want to make sure that we have enough in our stack to play well. Otherwise, we're in a shove or fold kind of mentality, right?
Great point. Sometimes you find yourself online or in a cash game and you're a little bit short stacked for one reason or another. You haven't reloaded yet. Maybe you're waiting for the button. That's one of my strategies to reload. You find yourself in a push or fold situation. You got $70 in front of you. Great hand to do that little push with right there. Guy raises, you got $70 in front of you and say, okay, let's gamble.
Right.
You know, it's a good hand to do that with. And maybe you don't have to reload if they hold up.
Right.
By the way, that's short stack. That is a short stack strategy.
Sure.
There's short stack strategy. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's important for tournament survival too.
Right. And then from the other side of that, we don't want to go broke with them if we have a decent sized stack, but if we are playing against the big stack at the table, maybe even the only stack that has us covered, let's say, then if he comes in with a raise, we don't want to four bet them. We don't want to go crazy. We're just calling that. And if it's too big of a raise, are we letting it go?
Yeah, I have no problem letting it go. But again, who is the player? Is he Uncle Jack, who always drinks a lot of Jack? maybe not. It's a hand that we're looking at the effective stack and we're making our decision. It just, we don't have to burn out our brain on, you know, deer in the headlights. Should I call? Shouldn't I call? We can make it a really simple math call. We have to put in $20. Well, you better look at his stack and you better have $350 in front of you to be able to capitalize whether you hit your set or not. It's a hand where you can, you know, there's a real difference between great winning players and players that don't win year in, year out. The ability to lay down a winner once in a while. By definition, poor players never lay down a winner. But we're playing those jacks cautiously. And we're using the effective stacks to really make our decision. And I got to put an asterisk there for our listeners, your listeners, Joe. The asterisk is, you don't want to come away listening to this and going, wow, that guy's whack. He wants me to throw away jacks? I don't think so. How many times have I thrown away pocket jacks pre-flop? Not too many, and I played a lot of hands.
Right.
So, but there are, you could theoretically come up with a good time to throw them away. But you don't want to play them because the other guy's stack is short. You want to play them if your stack is short.
Right.
So if the effective stacks are short and you're the short stack, well, that's a good time to, you know, take a chance with them.
Push the action.
But if another guy is raising, you don't want to double up another guy, especially in a tournament.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I've thrown away pocket fours and a four would have hit the flop, and I still remember that hand. You know, it was a big tournament, and I think I came in like, you know, I money, but, you know, I would have made the final table had I played those fours. These things can happen.
Yeah. No, I mean,
it was a raise and a re-raised pot. And I didn't have the enough chips to fool around with it.
Right. So stack size, our stack and the opponent's stack are both important. And that's kind of where I was going with that is it's a fine line there because you've got to make sure that you can win enough, but you don't want to lose at all either. So caution, yellow light.
I think we're 100% in agreement.
Yeah. Very good. That's a good place to end. We're in agreement.
By the way, one of my listeners and poker students listened to the podcast last week and he thought we were disagreeing a little bit. His was his comment. He sent me a text and I thought that was great. I wasn't sure what he meant or where I could get back to him on it, but that's where we are. We're in a conversation about poker.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's so many different ways to come to the same point, which we kind of talked about, we touched on last week. So,
yeah.
All right. Very good. I'll let you go wrangle the cat and we'll talk again next week.
Absolutely.
It's time for Joe's One Outer.
I've made a point in the past to show a correlation between poker and life. And there are many lessons that the game has taught me that I use every day. However, these lessons can work both ways. As we head into summer and vacations are beginning, I want to point out that life is much richer than poker. I want to make sure that everyone is getting away from the game and experiencing life. Maybe you learn a few things that you can use at the table. Even the pros that make a living playing the game have to surround themselves with other opportunities at times. Poker, even though it's a social game, it lacks the central component of building actual human relationships. Don't get me wrong, many of the friends that I met while playing are still my friends to this day, but only because we chose to continue that away from the poker table. Don't get so caught up in the game that you forget about the other things in your life. Look around, enjoy the world, and the people in it with you. It's your turn to play. Play wisely, play well. That's today's one outer, and that's today's show. I'll see you next week, 8-Team, and until then, I'll see you at the tables.
The Any Up Podcast is a production of AnyUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcasts@AnyUpMagazine.com or call the show at 540-339-7741. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to editor@AnyUpMagazine.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.